Hi!
I'm Tammy.
I'm Leanne.
And you're listening to Incrimination. If you notice, today's intro is a little different than our usual take on things. There won't really be a fun fact today because today happens to be, or the day that we're releasing it, happens to be Canada Day. And it also is our 1 year anniversary. And before we got into our case and all of that, we just wanted to quickly acknowledge the mass amount of graves that were found relating to Indigenous residential schools. And we wanted to share our sadness that comes with the, I don't want to say discovery, because they've been there.
Yeah. And they've been talked about, and people, and like, they've been talked about for really long, and Indigenous people have been saying, like, you're going to find them one day, and this is going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's happening now. Like, they found 215 unmarked graves in Kamloops, and another 751 in Saskatchewan just, I think, this past week. So, yeah, I think we just wanted to acknowledge that and also say it's such a fucked up thing, and I think that people who are trying to say that it's not a big deal or that it's ancient history really need to realize how recent this happened, because the last residential school closed in 1996, which isn't that long ago, to be honest, and I think...
Yeah, that's when I was born.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like I'm pretty young still.
Yeah. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is that we are all settlers of this land. And I remember, like, in elementary, whenever they did the land acknowledgement, I didn't really understand what it meant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're like, oh, this is taking place treaty on land. Traditional Treaty 6 land and things like that. Mm-hmm. And you don't really think about it. And then now with, like, as you grow older and you learn more about what really happened, it's like, okay, this is important because we are all immigrants to this land. This is not our land. And Indigenous people have been taking care of it for so long before any of the colonizers came. So
yeah. And Canada Day, what are you celebrating on Canada Day?
Especially this year, out of all years, right? Like, after all these mass graves have been uncovered just this month, like right before Canada Day, and I can't imagine how anyone in good conscience can celebrate Canada Day. Like, it's just, it's not it this year. Or any year, really, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, Canada has a pretty dark history that we tend to overlook a lot.
Yeah.
If you don't, like, or you don't go the extra mile to, like, actually learn and try to understand what these Indigenous people all have been going through.
Yeah.
And, like, it took me a really long time, too, because I was, honestly, growing up around a very, like, diverse group of people, but there weren't that many Indigenous people.
Yeah,
I feel like a lot of us, whether we realize it or not, have a lot of ingrained prejudices.
Yeah, I think so too.
And you don't really realize the damage that that does to some people until, you know, you're overtly, like, told, like, hey, the way you're thinking is wrong.
Yeah.
You know, it took me until, like, university when I took an Indigenous studies courses.
Yeah.
To finally unlearn some of those things.
Yeah. And I think that's part of it, too, is acknowledging that, you know, having the humility to know that we were wrong and that we are. Like, there's more to learn and there's more to unlearn, like you said, about, like, the way that we behave and some of the prejudices that we've had just growing up in the communities that we did.
Because I'm sure, like, regardless of race, we've had poor encounters with, like, all sorts of people in our lives. And it's not really fair to judge an entire group based on, you know, one or two interactions that you have with certain people, and like acknowledging, like, why, and learning about why they are in the situations that they are. It's humbling.
On that note, I have two other things that I wanted to bring up too. The other one was the crimes against Muslim families in Canada. So I'm not sure if you've heard, there was the killing of like an entire family on the street in London, Ontario, just a couple of weeks ago. And there have been continued attacks against Muslim women in Edmonton, which is where I'm from.
Oh,
and
I didn't hear about that.
Tammy was here too for a while. But yeah, there's been a lot of attacks against Muslim women just because they're wearing hijab on the street. And like, shit like that is unacceptable. And I think, I don't know what to say about it other than, like, it's unacceptable and it's, like, really sad to see that it's still happening here.
Especially when, like, Canada boasts our diversity and our inclusion, but then you hear about all this stuff happening, and it's like, clearly there's an issue here that we're not acknowledging and not addressing.
And there's a lot more work to be done in how we teach future generations of how to actually be more inclusive and embrace the diversity that our country has. But and then the second thing was, I know it's such a complex place to me sometimes. The second thing was kind of on the note of, like, you know, understanding where people are coming from and why they are in the situation they are. I think a lot of people see homeless people, and there's always a lot of judgments about, like, homeless people and whatnot. I read a post recently that, you know, sometimes those people are actually the survivors of residential schools, perhaps, but there's also obviously other walks of life that they've come from, and it's people don't choose to be homeless, right? Something led them to be there. And it's really unfortunate. And I wanted to bring that up because most of the Pacific Northwest right now is going through a historical heat wave. It's fucking hot. It's brutally hot even when you're inside your house. So if you can, and you're listening to this podcast and you're in, like, the Pacific Northwest, whether you're in Canada or the States, because everyone is going through, like, enormous heat waves, donate, like, water if you can, or donate money to homeless shelters so that you can help support
them. I literally just did that, like, 2 days ago or yesterday, I think.
Man, I'm trying not to complain about it. Because, like, I at least can stay home and I have, like, a fan on. And, like, I'm sheltered from the heat mostly, but it's still hot. But, like, if you're outside, like, it's sometimes our cities aren't built. Our cities a lot of the times are built against homeless people, which is really sad as a basis anyways. But some cities don't have enough shade for homeless people to go and stay in and stay away from the heat and... You know, they need water. There aren't a lot of places with accessible water and things like that. So, yeah, just do what you can. Donate water, donate money.
Have compassion. I feel like a lot of the times people are, like, afraid of the homeless.
Yeah.
I feel like we should see them as people who need the most compassion.
Yeah. They're human. I think that's a thing. Yeah. They are human. And
they're just trying to make it, you know?
Yeah. Okay. That was a really long preamble, but I felt like it was very important to talk about all of that.
Very necessary.
Well, we're going to wrap that up and head on into the case that we're going to talk about today, which, from the title of the episode, you already know. If you live in Canada, you may have already heard about this case. I don't think I've seen it covered by a lot of podcasts I usually listen to until I literally... Except this week, Crime Junkie posted their episode and I literally messaged Tammy and I was like, dead ass good. Like, I wrote this into my script of being like, oh, I don't think I've seen a lot of podcasts cover this, actually. And then I checked my phone and Crime Junkie just released their episode. It was kind of funny, but yeah.
I guess it kind of makes sense because Canada Day is coming up. So. Yeah. They wanted to do a Canadian case, I guess. And maybe.
Also, like, Crime Junkie has covered so many cases. You run out of cases to cover, right? Like, you cover all the big main cases that everyone knows about, and then you start searching for, like, other ones, even though this one's still pretty big as well. But I think they covered a lot of the ones in the States, so you just start looking at
moving up north.
Exactly. But we wanted to cover this because certain elements of this case are shared among many immigrant families who have hardworking parents who put a lot of pressure on their children to succeed in this new Western world. And oftentimes, children find themselves pressured to excel in school and extracurriculars and to pursue a career that is perceived as being successful, such as medicine, law, engineering, pharmacy, etc. And this is something that I think that a lot of immigrant children experience. But there is a glaring difference in this case. Because, you know, one child decides to take matters into her own hands. So we're gonna dive into that. And before I get started, I wanted to acknowledge the work done by the journalists at CBC, because that was one of my main sources. They did really great work. They covered basically every aspect of this case and documented all of it. And I always like using sources that I'm familiar with. And I think that CBC generally does a good job at reporting on things. And the quality of their articles are usually pretty good, too, because, I don't know, I've read some pretty shitty articles from, like, other places.
For sure.
But I think that, like, CBC has still kept a high bar for their quality of journalism, even throughout, like, you know, political reporting and all that sometimes can be very terrible and very inflammatory.
Mm-hmm.
But they did a good job. I also used some articles from the York Region, also an article from the National Post. On November 8th, 2010, police received a 911 call from a panicked Jennifer Pan. In the call, she can be heard screaming a jumbled mess of words about people breaking into her home. She tells the operator that she managed to free herself from being tied up. And she said, you know, my wrists were tied together, but I freed myself and I was able to call the police. The operator then tries to calm her down and tries to get the address from Jennifer of, like, where she's at. And this is around 10:30 to 11 p.m., so it is in the evening or, like, at night already.
Was it, like, a weekday or a weekend? Or
it was a Monday.
Wow. Yeah. Mondays, am I right?
Mondays. Mondays really get to you.
Oh, this is a fucked up case. No,
it is. Sorry. I know. We then start to hear a male voice in the background screaming out in agony, to which Jennifer kind of yells back in Vietnamese. I'm not sure really what she says. She's just like telling him, like calling back to him. Mm-hmm. And she tells the operator, I think my dad's outside and he's screaming. And so this is the 911 call. And when police arrive on scene, they see that Jennifer is still tied up. And like she says, she was able to free herself and she like called the police mm-hmm. while her hands were still sort of tied, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
When they got there, they found 53-year-old Bit Ha Pan, who was the mother, dead from her injuries, and she was shot multiple times. The father, Hui Han Pan, was shot twice, once in the shoulder and once point-blank to the face. Miraculously, oh, no. He survived, which is why we can hear the audio of him screaming in the background. But because of his injuries, he was immediately taken to the hospital and put into a medically induced coma. It's actually insane that he survived and he becomes a key witness to what happens. Also, like, how much do you suck that you shoot someone point blank in the face and they survive? They survive. But luckily he did.
That means, was that, like, just because she ran out of bullets or?
So, we'll get to that. Not, like,
okay.
They just missed shooting him is what happened. Because when he describes it later on, he said that he got shot, like, kind of near his right eye. So whatever happened, it maybe just, like, grazed his, like, face or, like, didn't get into the vital parts of his brain or whatever. But he survived, which is a miracle.
Yeah.
According to the York Regional Police's statement the next morning, they said that three men had entered the home at around 10:30 to 11 p.m. at night through the front door, which was unlocked. The primary motivation was determined to be money, as that's what Jennifer had described to the police. She said that the three men had broken in and started asking for money and valuables from the family.
Mm-hmm.
She had been tied up, taken to a separate room, while the three men spent about half an hour rummaging through the house for valuables. And this is what she told the police.
Mm-hmm.
Both of the parents had then been taken downstairs and they were shot before the assailants fled on foot. But it's emphasized in the CBC article that Jennifer, who was a daughter, was left unharmed. So she was only tied up and it didn't even like look like she was really roughed up or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, you know, so they left her alone.
You know, were human enough to not hurt the child.
Yes, apparently. They also had a son. His name was Felix. He was just away at university at this time. So he wasn't there while all of this went on, which...
Lucky Felix.
Yeah. At the point that this article was written, which was literally the day after the home invasion, it was in the early stages of the investigation. So the police chief, Armand Labarge, described the invasion as being random in the sense that there doesn't seem to have been any known motive for these individuals to have been targeted. So they actually started looking into the case, like in the very early stages, they were thinking it might have been a case of like mistaken identity. Maybe they went after the wrong family. They didn't really know.
Yeah, because they weren't, like, super well off or anything, right?
They had... It was, like, middle class, sort of. That's pretty much it, and...
But they weren't, like, millionaires.
Well, kind of. But I don't think it was, like, one of those ones where you could tell that they were rich.
Yeah.
I think they had, like, a Lexus... And maybe that was, like, the biggest sign of wealth, but those aren't...
Those are, like, middle upper class. Yeah.
yeah, they weren't like super, super well off where people could see them and be like, oh, that's a family I want to target kind of thing.
Right.
The series of events came as a shock to what is normally a very quiet neighborhood in Markham, Ontario. People described the family as being very home-oriented, said that the mother was very proud of her house and her kids. They said that the father was also very hardworking, and together the parents had immigrated to Canada from Vietnam and built up a life that they were really proud of and a sizable amount of savings as well to, you know, like support their children as they're going to university and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
There's hours and hours of footage from relating to this case, actually, from when they're sort of just interviewing and gathering information from Jennifer, because that's what you do. Like, she's a key witness. She was there for the entire event. So obviously they bring her in. And they want to just talk to her, get information about, like, what the fuck just happened? Like, who are these three people? Do you have any connection to them? Like, what's happening here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there is a full breakdown and analysis in a YouTube video on the channel called JCS Criminal Psychology. They also have a bunch of other videos with, like, other crimes where they break down the psychology of maybe what the investigator or the detective is doing to try to get information out of the person they're interviewing. So there's one with Casey Anthony. I watched those
TikToks.
Yeah, they're actually so cool.
Yeah, they're so fascinating.
Yeah.
And like fucked up, because then you see how like fucked up these people are that commit these crimes and like try to get away with it.
Yeah, it's scary.
Mm-hmm.
When Jennifer was first brought to the police station, it was a standard procedure where she was sworn in as a witness to the events. And, you know, you have to still take the oath to tell the truth and whatnot, because, like, you can't, as a witness, it's still basically illegal if you lie to the police about what happened, because that throws off their entire investigation. And you can also be seen as, like, aiding and abetting.
Obstruction of justice.
Yeah, all of that good stuff. Or bad stuff, I guess. As she was describing her story, the investigator began to become a little bit more suspicious because her story wasn't really consistent and she kind of doubled back on some things. She like told random details, too much detail, mixed up her details as she was going through her story. So they were a little bit suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
And their suspicions were confirmed after her father woke up from his coma because, again, he was induced to like into a coma just to like deal with his injury so that the doctors could like help him recover.
Right.
And he recounted the series of events, which happened to be quite different than what Jennifer had told.
Oosh.
You know, I think if the father hadn't survived, this case wouldn't have unfolded the way that it did, because he was very important to, like, getting to the truth of what happened to that night. And so...
She fucked.
Yeah, she fucked. She is really fucked, actually. They bring her back in 2 days later for a second round of questioning, and they're still questioning her, like, as a witness. They told her, you know, we're just trying to collect more information for your statement that you gave us 2 days prior and clarify some things just to get more details and make sure that we have all the details down packed.
Right. And at this point, did she know her dad was out of his coma? Or?
I'm not sure. I feel like she would have had to know because she was at the hospital, like, here and there. There was actually reports where while she was at the hospital, her family members were like, hey, do you want to like use our phone to make a call? Because she was trying to like call her boyfriend. And she's like, no, it's okay. And she used a payphone instead. So that kind of comes back to like why people were really sus about her, because it's like, why don't you just, if you're calling your boyfriend, just fucking use my phone. Like, what's the big deal kind of thing? But yeah, she was at the hospital. So I'm assuming
that she would have known. Because at that point, they weren't treating her as like a suspect.
I think they were suspicious, but they didn't, and they were starting to treat her like that, but they weren't explicit about it. Like, they weren't like, hey, you're a suspect kind of thing. When they bring her in for a second round of just questioning, interviewing, information gathering, the investor in this case, I think, did a really good job at gaining her trust and then, you know, warming her up before just pressuring her with, like, harder questions and asking her, like, very explicitly what the fuck happened, basically.
Yeah.
There are moments where Jennifer keeps apologizing during the second round of interviews, and the investigator tells her, you know, no, don't say you're sorry. There's nothing to be sorry for. The only reason to be sorry is if you're lying to me. And it's just like, whoa. Yeah. And she just, like, is just like, I'm so sorry, blah, 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 like, because she's crying and stuff, and she's apologizing for crying and, like, mixing up details and things like that. Because I think at this point, she's starting to feel the pressure of being in that room. There are also moments in the video where she grabs a Kleenex and she, like, presses it against her face, but she doesn't blow her nose. She doesn't, like, wipe. But you know how sometimes if you cry, you can just, like, put it on your eyes to, like, soak up tears?
Yeah.
But the detective said that when she removed it from her face, the Kleenex was completely dry. So there's a lot of different moments like this throughout the video where... And there's, like, hours and hours. I didn't watch all of it. I kind of watched the shortened version of it where she kind of fakes her emotions and, like, fake cries and fake feeling very sad about things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, it's very weird.
Yeah.
The detective presses on about certain aspects. And one of these that most people actually focus on is how she ended up, you know, being tied up, and how does she, like, call the police while she was tied up? Because her hands, she said that her hands were tied behind her back. And mm-hmm. so they actually, in the video, they make her demonstrate it, and you can watch it. I'll link it in our show notes as well. But
Right. They
make her demonstrate it, and she basically had to, like, wiggle out her one hand and grab her cell phone from her waistband, mm-hmm. put it on speakerphone to, like, talk to the police. And it kind of made sense when she demonstrated it. But people were like, she probably practiced it just in case, like, she had to demonstrate it, because it, like, it looked like it actually could have worked, because if you have your hands tied at your wrist, you can still, like, move your entire arm kind of thing, right?
My friend actually did that before.
Were they tied up for something?
Yeah, she got tied up.
Holy shit.
Managed to, like, call the cops. Like, this was, like, years ago, but they had a home invasion, and she got tied up, and she was able to, like, call them from, like, her pocket, but just like dialed 911 because she didn't want to put it on speaker so that the people in the house could hear. But it was enough for them to, like, you know, try hone in on that location.
I think that's always, like, that's always a good idea to just call even if you can't talk, because
mm-hmm.
they can, like, hear the noise and stuff like that.
Oh, and also, like, people should learn how to, like, dial 911 without looking. That's just, like, a skill that you should have.
Yeah, true. I think, like, from your pocket, have made it easier now, where if you, like, hold and press onto the power button, at least for mine, like, it'll come up, do you want to restart, do you want to turn off your phone, or do you want to emergency dial someone?
Mm-hmm.
So
the only thing about that is, I know, like, for iPhone, it makes, like, a really loud alarm
noise. Okay, that's fucking dumb.
I there's one that does that. I don't remember. I need to, like, brush up on my emergency knowledge of my phone, but
Yeah. That was the other thing, too, is, like, sometimes I think, this is just also from watching shows, but when people call during a home invasion and the operator, like, I know you have to get information, but, like, they make them talk. I'm like, dude, I don't want to talk to you right now. Like, if I talk, they're going to find where I am. Like, why do I want... Yeah. But I get it. Like, you need to get the information to know where they are, but, like, just fucking triangulate my phone, please.
Please. Just come.
Please.
Like, get people on the way, and then we can figure things out if we can, you know?
Yeah.
Not that, hoping that never happens, knock on wood.
Yeah. But it's always good to be prepared, right? Preparation is key in case anything ever happens.
My kids, and I think, like, Morbid talks about it all the time, but my kids are going to be so prepared for life.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are such paranoid people after hearing about what atrocities the world is capable of.
Yeah, even when I go on walks now, like, I'll, like, put one of my headphones like this so that I can hear sounds, because I love listening to podcasts or listening to audiobooks while I'm walking, but I'm like, if anyone sneaks up behind me, I'm fucked.
Oh my god, I hate that. And, like, I hate that, like, noise-canceling earphones are a thing now, because I hate every time that anyone comes up to next to me. Like, if it has noise-canceling, I'm not about it. Like, I'm not getting it.
Yeah, I like them when I'm working, like, inside and whatever, but...
Yeah, but, like, still.
Goddamn.
What if you die?
What if you die? That's my question for everything that I do. What if you die?
What if you die?
The detective then transitions into a completely different aspect of the interrogation and begins asking her about her relationship with her parents. And people suspect that this is probably the first time that she's ever been asked about her life... And it almost seems like the detective takes on almost like a therapist role. So he's really building that level of trust with her to get her to feel comfortable and to, like, talk to him about things.
Do you know the interrogator's name?
I don't. I can maybe find it. That would be cool. I can, if I find it, I'll post it on our Instagram with like a photo of him as well.
Yeah.
But he did a really cool job. Like, it was actually kind of cool to see him question her as well.
Yeah.
And it is through this that we find out more about the background of the family, about Jennifer, and basically everything that leads up to this entire situation itself. And so, like I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, it's not uncommon for parents to put a lot of pressure on their kids to succeed. And from a young age, Jennifer was pressured to do well in many different aspects of her life. She was actually a very talented figure skater with the dreams of making it to the 2010 Vancouver Olympics. Unfortunately, she suffered from a knee injury when she was 14, and basically it was severe enough to put an end to those dreams, which really sucked. Unfortunately for her, even though she excelled in figure skating, she didn't really do that well in school. But, you know, like, when you're in an Asian family, and I think, like, a lot of families, too, like, your parents want you to get fucking, like, straight A's.
Yeah.
And so, it's at this point, and she's in high school now, she started lying to her family, and this was sort of her dipping into the toes of being a prolific liar. Yeah. Dipping her toes into being... What did I say?
You said dipping into the toes.
Oh, this is the beginning of her dipping her toes into being a prolific liar.
Okay.
She started faking her high school report cards by changing her grades from C's to A's, which I'm like, damn, that takes a lot of effort to like put in the time to fake an entire report card.
I don't think it's that hard.
In high school. Ew.
You just need like some whiteout, a nice thin pen, and a scanner.
Easy peasy. But yeah, that's where she started.
Not that I've ever done it.
Yeah. And then she faked her high school diploma because she didn't actually graduate. She dropped out of high school. And then she, you know, continued doing this. She faked an acceptance letter to the University of Toronto for Pharmacology. So she faked an entire acceptance letter saying that she got in, so her parents thought that she was going to university for pharmacology.
Oh, man. I thought she did get accepted.
Nope.
Like, she conditional acceptance.
No, because she dropped out of high school. There's no way you get accepted into pharmacology when you drop out of high school. Unless you do, like, you know, courses afterwards to make up for your grades and stuff like that, but she never graduated. She also lied to them about volunteering at the Sick Kids Hospital in Toronto, so they thought she was like this bright star who was like doing really well in university and volunteering in her free time at the hospital for kids. But no, she's just lying. And basically for the entire 4 years that her parents thought she was living with a friend and going to university, she was actually living with her on and off again boyfriend from high school, whose name is Daniel Wong, and he was a drug dealer.
Oh, okay.
Which is awesome. Yeah. And so, obviously, this is a very intricate web of lies to keep together and to try to keep lying about. And it's also a lot of pressure to keep up and make sure you don't, number one, get caught or slip up saying the wrong thing about what you're actually doing. You know, her parents eventually find out about all of this. They're like, holy shit, you never went to university. You are still dating your boyfriend that we don't approve of. Like, their parents were really against her boyfriend because, you know, like, I think they either knew he was a drug dealer.
People have an idea.
But you also, like, you're sus of people, right?
Even if he wasn't a drug dealer, like, you can get bad vibes from anyone.
Yeah, exactly. And so then her father gave her an ultimatum, basically saying that you either choose your family, you stay with us, go back to college, or you choose your boyfriend, in which case we cut you off financially and disown you. And this is sort of the trigger point for her because, you know, on the outside, it seemed like she chose her family. And that's what she told the detectives as well. She's like, I chose my family. I made the choice that I did. It was really hard, but I moved back in with them, etc. But in reality, she actually was still staying together with her boyfriend, and it's suspected that this is when she started to hatch a plan to kill her parents.
Okay.
Yeah. The detective conducting the interview continues putting pressure on her until she starts confessing up details of what happened. Jennifer's explanation of the events is that she had actually hired a hitman to kill her and not her parents because she saw no other way out of her situation, and she said, you know, she wanted to be with her boyfriend, but her parents were also making it really difficult for her, and she wanted to commit suicide, but, you know, she chose to hire a hitman instead to do that for her. And this is something that she maintains and testifies to in court as well. However, she said that she had a change of heart before that night of the murders and, like, everything that had happened, and wanted to cancel the hit on herself, for which there would be a $8,500 cancellation fee. And she said that this was, you know, she was collecting that money up until the night of the murders. Also, that's a huge fucking cancellation fee.
Yeah, like, what the fuck?
God.
Like, to be fair, I don't think it's a very regulated industry.
Yeah, they're, you know... Yeah. There's competition. You can't really find pricing details that often everywhere. Yeah. Like, it's not easy to find. Like, how much does this regularly cost?
Yeah.
To do, like, a cost comparison.
Can you imagine? It's like a website. Like, sugar daddies. But, like, not.
But not. That should be the name of the website. Sugar daddies, but not.
Sure hope there's no websites out there like that.
However, the 116 texts between her and her boyfriend, as well as a string of emails and calls between them and the three assailants, were pretty damning, to say the least. Mm-hmm. It turns out that she had agreed to pay $10,000 for the hit on her parents. So it was $5,000 for each parent, basically.
Okay.
Potentially, if it had worked out, she would stand to inherit half of their estate, which was somewhere around $1 million. So they were millionaires in terms of how much they had stayed up at, or saved up. And I think maybe part of that estate would also be their home. And homes in Markham are pretty fucking expensive, too. So if they had sold that off, then they would inherit quite a sizable amount of wealth.
Okay, pause. $10,000 to kill two people? I feel like that's a lot lower than what I expected.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I feel like human life is worth a little more than $5,000.
Yeah. But also, if you consider, right, the way that they missed shooting her dad, I don't think they were really skilled at...
assassins?
Yeah. They were probably just, like, your regular...
Some Craigslist...
No, you know the whole meme where it's just like, this is the Wish version of X? It's like, I ordered this on Wish. It's like, I ordered my assassin on Wish and this is what I got.
Oh my god. Could you imagine seeing, like, Kijiji ads of, like...
For a hitman.
For a hitman. Oh my god.
Goddamn.
Sorry, continue.
All good. But yeah, no, I agree. It's sort of low for what it entails.
Yeah.
But whatever. Mm-hmm. The theory behind why she wanted to do this stemmed from the ultimatum, again, that she was given, her family, or her boyfriend. And the Crown, or, like, the prosecutor, depending on where you live, we just say the Crown because we're a fucking British colony, said that Jennifer saw her parents being the main obstacle between her and her relationship with Daniel Wong. And if they were gone, then they could finally be together.
But, you know, like, she could also have just left. Oh, I guess then she wouldn't get the money.
Because if she left, her dad said that she would be financially cut off. And I don't know, maybe like the
girl boyfriend, get a job.
That, and also, like, I guess her boyfriend wasn't that good of a drug dealer if he couldn't make fucking money to support them. Yeah, I'm just saying. Dealers make bank. I'm just saying. I wanted to quickly go back to the 911 call as well, because remember how I mentioned at the end of it, you can hear her dad screaming.
Yeah.
And the whole 911 call was staged so that she could, you know, call the police, make it all look like a home invasion, and go with that line of testimony. But obviously, she did not expect her father to survive. Because if he hadn't, then I think she possibly could have gotten away with it, depending on, like, I don't know how much evidence was on the scene itself. But, you know, if he didn't survive, she maybe would have gotten away with all of this. But I'm glad he did, because fucked up people, man.
Yeah.
From what I could tell, Jennifer's defense lawyer, who is Paul Cooper, was trying to plant seeds of doubt in the minds of the jury about the intent and the planning of what unfolded, because they were charged with first-degree murder charges, as well as attempted murder. And when you're trying to prove first-degree murder, you have to, like, prove that it was premeditated, essentially, mm-hmm. right? And so, basically, the line of defense was try to cast reasonable doubt upon the fact that this was, like, none of this was supposed to happen. This was not premeditated at all. Like, it just, home invasion, no one planned this kind of thing, is what they were trying to prove. Yeah. And so, yeah, that was basically it. They were trying to prove this was never supposed to happen at all. The defense lawyer said that earlier plans had already been called off because a previous attempt had failed.
No.
Apparently, Jennifer, in I don't know how long ago before, but she had paid someone else to kill her parents before. But that person basically ran off with her money. And so she said that after that...
That's so funny. Oh, God.
Love it. And so they said that, like, after that happened, she was like, never mind.
That's such a good scam.
Yeah. I'm going to kill your parents for you. JK.
I never felt so happy about a scammer. Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. The defense lawyer also said, quote, if this was a planned murder, why carry out the charade of the whole robbery? Why didn't the intruders shoot Mr. and Mrs. Pan immediately, unquote. They then went on to try and push most of the responsibility onto Eric Carty, who was one of the three assailants.
And, oh, they found them?
Yeah.
Oh, they're real there were three people.
So they found Eric Carty, who was one of them, and he was being tried separately from the rest of, like, all of them, because his lawyer had gotten sick in the middle of the trial.
Oh my god.
Lol.
Wait, so they split $10,000 among three people? That's even... What?
kind of dumb, right? kind of dumb. Men. they do be dumb. Yeah. Jennifer maintained her innocence throughout her trial. She pled not guilty to her charges, and she said that she had no knowledge of the break-in even happening, nor had she meant for her mother to die, which contradicts itself, because if you didn't mean for your mother to die, then, and you didn't know about the break-in, then... You know what I mean? Like, if you weren't planning it, then how would you ever not mean for your mother to die from a break-in that you weren't planning?
Right. No, I get it.
Yeah. Whatever.
Interesting.
Yeah. And she kept on pressing on to say that she was trying to call off the hit, quote-unquote, on herself. So that's her side of things.
Cancellation fee is 80%?
85% of the fucking 10K. Like, hey, we didn't even carry out any of it, but we're going to make you pay 85% of the logic. There is the logic has left the chat. There is no logic in this. Like,
85% or what? They'll kill you? And not make the 10K? This is so funny to me. Like,
it's really dumb, actually.
And not like the deaths are very, or the death of the mother is very, very tragic, but like the whole plan, oh my god.
The monetary side of things just does not make sense. I also wanted to talk a little bit more about her father's testimony because it sheds a little bit more detail as to what happened that night. Mm-hmm. According to Hui Han Pan, he had been woken up in the middle of his sleep, because keep in mind this was 10:30, 11-ish, you know. I don't know, parents usually sleep earlier, so he was already in bed. And he was woken up with a gun to his head. Him and his wife were then led downstairs into the basement, where blankets were thrown over their heads. He said that his wife had initially refused the blankets and kept pleading with the intruders to leave her daughter alone, which is, like, really sad.
So sad.
I think that fucks me up, because it's like, she... You know, Jennifer's fucking trying to kill her parents, and her mom is like, hey, please leave her alone. Like, don't.
Like, her first instinct is to, like, protect her daughter.
Yeah, because she's a fucking mom. Like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
After which, one of the intruders said, don't worry, your daughter is very nice, so I won't hurt her. Which is like, what the fuck? After this exchange...
That's, like, either really creepy or, like, really sus.
Yeah.
Because that could go kind both of ways.
Both.
Yeah.
After this exchange, the father said that there was no further mention of the money that they had supposedly come for in the first place. So if you were here for the money, but now you're just throwing blankets over our heads and like pointing guns at us, and you're still not and you're not asking us for the money anymore, then like what's the point, right?
Yeah,
because at first they were demanding money and their valuables and stuff, but like now suddenly it just seemed like it changed.
Mm-hmm.
Bit Ha Pan was shot 3 times and Hui Ha Pan was shot 2x. When he came to, he realized that his wife was already dead, so he basically like he blacked out from the gunshot to the face, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But he came back to, and then like his wife was beside him, and he tried to shake her, but she was already dead, and he could tell.
That's so sad.
Yeah. And so he ran to a neighbor's house to ask for help and to call the police. And I think that this is the point in which like you can hear him screaming in the 911 call.
I see.
As he's basically like coming back up from the basement and being like, holy shit, like what's happening kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
He also said that while they were being led down to the basement, he saw that his daughter was not tied up at the time. And she was actually whispering with one of the men, almost as if they were friends, you know, in like hushed tones kind of things where they're like standing next to each other and stuff like that. That's just like really shocking to see as
yeah, your own daughter.
Yeah. And then also for the mom to still keep pleading. And yeah, it's just really sad. I read somewhere, I don't know if this, like I didn't see it in other places, so I didn't want to say that this is fact, but like her mom apparently was in the washroom. You know how like moms will soak their feet in a small tub to like clean them and like just like
mm-hmm. home pedicure.
Yes, apparently she was doing that when they broke into the house, and she had to. Yeah, they said. I think the father was like, "Oh, she didn't even finish soaking her feet," and then they came and like burst through the doors and stuff like that. I was like, "That's just really sad because it's such a mundane moment that you're having at the end of your day to wind down."
Oh.
And then all of this happens.
I'm just like, ugh, I have like this image where it's like the mom's like lying on the floor dead and like her feet are wet.
I know.
And that makes me sad.
I know. While he was testifying, it said that this is when Jennifer also started crying, which I don't believe because I feel like she can lie about anything. maybe she did cry and she finally felt remorse for what she had done.
It could have been like tears of fear. Yeah, like people cry when they're scared too. Because yeah, like at that point she's like, oh fuck, I'm fucked.
Yeah. Even in the interrogation video too, at one point she's like, what's going to happen to me and things like that, and they're like, well, we can't tell you because you haven't told us anything yet about what happened. And she seems scared, I think, knowing that she was about to be found out. And so on December 13th 2014, so this is almost, well, this is more than 4 years later, but it takes a long time with all the pre-trial amble, and the trial itself took a while. Jennifer Pan, her on and off again boyfriend Daniel, and 2 of the 3 assailants, whose names are Leonard Crawford and David Milviganum, I can't say that name, but I tried my best. They were all found guilty by the jury for first-degree murder as well as attempted murder. On January 23rd, 2015, they were officially sentenced. And so Jennifer Pan was sentenced to 25 years for first-degree murder and life in prison for attempted murder. So in essence, she won't have a chance for parole until serving out that 25-year sentence, which means by that time she'll be about like 50 years old-ish. But if she doesn't get parole, then it's like life in prison kind of thing.
I see.
Because a first-degree murder charge comes with the 25 years, and the attempted is life in prison.
Why is that?
I don't know. You'd think that it would be the other way around. I feel like it'd be
the other way around. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, I feel like attempted murder is such a weird charge to have. Because it's, like, the only reason it's attempted murder is because they failed. You tried. Right? Because, like, you still tried to kill someone. And if it actually went through, they would be dead. But, like, out of luck or out of, like, pure lack of skill, they survive.
Yeah.
I don't get how that's, like, a lesser, I don't know.
Yeah,
that's maybe just me.
Legal stuff, whatever.
I don't make the rules.
Yeah. And so all of them were found guilty. I couldn't really figure out. I was trying to look for what happened with Eric Carty. And so he ended up, he killed someone else in 2009. And was the only thing that I found where he got charged and sentenced for. And he was serving out a life sentence for that one. So I'm not sure if that was like they just piled it all on together or what happened, but he was in prison and he died in prison back in 2018. So that's that. And the rest of them, I was trying to dig into like where they're at. I'm assuming they're all just in prison. Yeah. And to this day, we don't actually know who exactly pulled the trigger. It's suspected that Eric Carty was the one because he was sort of the more like violent one out of the group. But no one knows except, you know, they were all still charged, which I find, like, I find that very interesting that the jury found them all guilty because, so the judge of the trial said, you know, you can hand down different sentences for each one of them. You don't need to find them all guilty of the same charges. Like, they were still being tried individually and not as a group. So, you know, Jennifer could have gotten the first degree murder and the attempted charge, while others maybe only got, like, the attempted, etc., and things like that. But the jury found them all guilty of all of the same charges of first degree and attempted murder. So I just found that interesting, especially when we don't know who pulled the trigger and there's no evidence as to who actually did it.
But I mean, they were all in for it. Yeah. Like they were, the intention was there for all of them to participate in this, whether it be like directly or indirectly, right?
Yeah. 10K. Split three ways, Jesus. They're not business kids, so it's fine.
I mean, she was a high school dropout.
Yeah, it makes sense, I guess.
She failed. Oh, yeah, she failed calculus.
She didn't even take calculus, probably. I doubt. Who knows?
I don't remember. Yeah. I feel like I read that she failed calculus.
Yeah. I don't think there's really a happy ending to this at all, despite her being sentenced and put in prison, because her father said in a statement later on that although he survived, he felt that he actually died that day too because of the loss of his wife and also the daughter that he thought he knew.
That's so sad.
And after the sentencing, he said, "I hope my daughter, Jennifer, thinks about what happened to her family and can become a good, honest person someday."
That's so sad.
Yeah. It's really sad. And like, I couldn't find this anywhere, but the Crime Junkie podcast mentioned her brother, Felix, who his life also got turned upside down. It's really hard for him to find a job because anytime someone in that area hears his last name, they immediately like think about this and then Felix find 10. Out about it. Yeah.
He should get a name change and move.
He should. Honestly, just fucking change your last name. It's fine. Like, no one's going to judge you for that.
There's lots of Felixes out there in the world.
Like, it just sucks for him. And yeah, like, he obviously lost his relationship with his parents and, you know.
Not just his relationship.
Like his actual parent, too. And, like, it's also really hard. And obviously the father probably grieves every now and then. Or maybe all the time for his family. Because that's a thing, right? I think especially for immigrant families, when you're able to build a life in a new country, your family is your entire like, pride and joy. And I think at the end of the day, her parents really cared about her. And even though they're like, you know, there's always emotional trauma, not always, but there sometimes can be emotional trauma with like families and things like that. And obviously there was a lot of stress and pressure put on her by her parents and they were very strict in terms of their parenting style and whatnot. I just, you know, you don't have to fucking murder them. Just leave, right?
Like, yeah, there's so many other ways that situation could have been handled. And she chose the worst, arguably the worst way to go about it.
Exactly. You just leave. And it's not like she didn't already do that before she went and lived with her boyfriend, but it was, I think, mostly the financial component of...
Yeah. She wanted that will.
Yeah. And I think her parents were, obviously, while she was going to college, quote-unquote, she was getting financially supported by her parents because her parents were helping to support her career and things like that. So,
And that's a lot of money to just get cut off at once. Yeah. I think that would have been, like, a huge shock to her.
Yeah.
Did she get any, like, psyche vows?
Not that I could find. That might be interesting to see.
Because I'm, like, wondering, was she, like, a narcissist or, like, was she, like, a pathological liar or... Was she a psychopath? I don't know.
Yeah. Because she lied very easily.
Yeah.
And she just, like, built up this entire... Because that was, what, from 14 years old until 20... It's, like, 10 years of lies.
Is it?
Yeah, because she started basically around when she was 14. And then when this happened, she was 24. Yeah.
She was 24 when she killed her parents?
Yeah.
That's my age.
Yeah.
That's so fucked up.
It's so weird. Like,
yeah. And, like, you think, like, oh, yeah, like, I know tons of friends who have, like, really strict parents. My parents have been really strict on me when I was younger, but they've loosened up since I moved away.
Yeah.
But, like, as much as you hate your parents, like...
You don't... This is not the solution, right? Like, this...
No, for sure.
This is never the solution. That's the case of Jennifer Pan. I wanted to sort of end this off. We kind of talked about it, too, about home invasion and home security and safety. So, mm-hmm. it just was funny while I was... researching this case, my mom's talking about how her friend, they were at home and it was late, probably, like, it was already dark, so probably around 10 or 11 at our time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And someone rang their doorbell and they said that they were a police officer just doing interviews and gathering information from the neighborhood because of some, I don't know what happened in the area, but they were, that was what they were telling. They were like, oh, we're here to investigate this thing, blah, blah, blah. And they didn't open the door all the way. You know how there's like two, you can have like a screen door and you can talk through that. So they were just doing that. And then they were like kind of sus. They didn't let them in. And they were like, oh, just like hang on a second and whatever. So they called their neighbor and they're to be like, hey, because if they're investigating the entire area, they would have, they're not the last house on the street, right?
Yeah.
So they would have called like, or swept they would have swept through the other houses and they didn't. So they, like, while they were calling, the dude just left because they probably thought they were calling the cops or something.
Yeah.
And so they left and got back in their car and, like, drove away. And so, like, that was just, just ended.
That's so scary.
But it was really scary. And they have two daughters. And they were watching from an upstairs window because they have, like, an upstairs living room that you can look down at the street on. Or look down at the street. And... the two daughters said that they saw another car and it wasn't a police car or anything. Mm-hmm. They just said like there was someone else sitting in the car and all of that. And usually I feel like when, I don't know, I've had police come to my house before and they always come in pairs.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Oh, my dad got a speeding ticket. So they came, I don't know. My dad was speeding. I don't know why they came to the house. It was really weird. But they were like, yeah, your dad was speeding. And we were like, what the fuck? Why are you at our house? And they literally knocked at like 10 p.m. We're all and fucking scared. Were they, like, scared. Uniformed? For my mom's friend's case, they weren't... I don't think they were.
That's so suspicious. I don't think they were.
Yeah, so I was just like, man, if that happens, you know, just be really cautious in these situations. Also, police, can you... If it's just an invest... Like, please don't fucking knock at our doors at, like, 10 p.m. I don't know. I feel like... Or
that's
just...
so scary.
Like, find... I think there needs to be some sort of, like, training to be able to do that in a way where people aren't super suspicious. Or just some knowledge for the general public to know about how to approach situations like this. Because I feel like nowadays it's way too easy to get a fake-ass cop uniform and show up at people's houses. Genuinely scares me how easy it is to do that. So,
If you don't already have one of those, like, camera doorbells, like... please invest in one, because
if you can,
if anything, it's a deterrent for people to come up and like one, not steal your packages, two, like not try to invade your home.
Yeah, you know? And the other thing too is I've seen people just say, you know, put up a sign that says there's a security system, even if you don't have
one. If you don't have one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's also another thing that always makes me laugh.
Oh, and I'm also like, well, work boots. Leave them outside the door so people think that there's a man living there, especially if you're, like, a woman living alone.
Yeah.
That's, like, a good tip, too.
Yeah. Have you seen the thing where people will, like, write in the snow, like, F1, like, one female, or one F or one whatever? Female. That's... I just got chills saying that, because I remember the first time I saw that, I was so scared. I was like, that is so fucked up.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
And, like, there's... If you look them up, there's, like, a whole list of symbols that, like, these people use to... Like, oh, this family doesn't have a security system. Oh, this family has a dog. Don't go for this family. Or, like, this family is affluent. They have a lot of money. Like, they're a good target.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just, like, be mindful of your surroundings. If you see some, like, weird, something that you think might be, like, graffiti, look a little deeper into it. Because you might be marked. I remember the girl that posted that video of being marked, like, 1F. She ended up staying with her mom.
That's good.
And while it was, like, being investigated, because, like, that's so scary.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. At first, I remember, like, the first time hearing this case, I was like, wow, those parents must have been fucking crazy. it's still not enough to justify murdering them.
Not at all.
Like, I hear about abusive parents all the time, and clearly, I don't know if they were abusive towards her, but even so, don't kill your parents.
Yeah.
Don't hire assassins to kill your parents. Especially, like, I don't want to say especially not shitty ones, but, like...
As a joke, that's what we can say, but...
Yeah. Yeah. But like, seriously, don't...
Don't do that. That's not the solution. I think there's a lot of different ways out of it, even when it doesn't feel like there's a way out of that situation. I think... Yeah. You know,
find there are a way, lot of resources.
Yeah, find a way out of it without, you know, literally the worst.
Yeah, solution. Go live with your boyfriend's parents. Live with your boyfriend's parents.
Yeah,
or something.
Or like find a friend.
Did he get anything?
Daniel got sentenced. Yeah, he was also sentenced to the same charges. So we.
Oh really?
He's gone.
How did the investigation? Because you didn't mention that.
No, they just did it all at once because of all the texts and stuff. So it wasn't just her. They basically tied it all together because the texts linked them all together.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so he was part of it too.
Yeah. He was helping her, like, because they were texting back and forth. Because I think I mentioned earlier there was a string of emails, calls, texts, basically between all of them planning all of this out.
Oh, I see. I didn't realize he was part of it too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, thanks so much for that case. And is that all?
That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for that case. And thank you to everyone for listening to our 1 year anniversary episode. It's been a wild year, to say the least.
Yeah.
But I think like having this podcast and having something like to work towards, like even if we aren't growing a crazy amount, just seeing how many people are interested in, you know, Asian true crime and are willing to like hear these stories, it's really nice.
Yeah, it is. It's been a lot of fun. So
yeah. So thanks so much for everyone for listening. I honestly didn't know how far this podcast would go on for.
Yeah, me
but
too.
I feel like I feel like we could make it maybe to year two.
Maybe. We could. Maybe. We'll see.
We could.
You know, we're going to be here to provide content as much as we can until our lives get too busy. And if that happens,
and too hectic. Unless we get a bunch of sponsors who want to pay us to do this for a living, then hit us
then,
up.
Then we can talk.
Yeah. But yeah, thanks for being with us until this point. If you want to check out any of the resources that Leanne used for her case, feel free to check bit.ly/incrimination for all of our show notes, as well as our Instagram to see photos of Jennifer and other people involved and pictures of the case or related to the case on our Instagram at incrimination. Don't be Jennifer Pan.
Don't be Jennifer Pan. That's the lesson, kids.
And also be compassionate to people like Felix who were not involved whatsoever, but are living a terrible life as a result of someone else's horrible actions.
Yep.
And donate water to your local homeless shelters and reflect on Canadian history.
Yep.
Bye!